everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. It's February 2020, and you're listening to episode 162 of Postmodern Realities, and I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. On this episode, I'm joined by one of our journal authors, Bob Perry, who has a master's in Christian apologetics from Biola University and is a speaker with the Life Training Institute and a contributing writer to our magazine. Bob has written an article for a Viewpoint column. Viewpoint articles address relevant contemporary issues in discernment and apologetics from a particular perspective that's usually not shared by all Christians. And we hope that the intended result is that Christian thinking on an issue will be stimulated and enhanced, whether or not readers end up agreeing with the author. Bob's article is called, You Say You Want a Revolution, and you can read it for free online at our website, equip.org. Bob, it's good to have you on.
Thanks. Thanks. Good to be here, Melanie.
Well, if someone goes to the landing page for your article, they'll notice that the artwork is a picture of George Washington and Lenin and Mao Zedong and also the Ayatollah from Iran. I think he's still around. He must be very elderly. And so your article begins with a reference to just war theory. Can you explain for our readers who might not know what just war theory is and why you're starting your article by mentioning it?
Sure. I have to admit, when you asked me to write an article about this topic, I didn't really know where to start. There's a lot to it. There's a lot of history behind it, a lot of different viewpoints of, frankly, that I wasn't really aware of. But I think this, starting with just war theory, was a framework that I think we can use as Christians, because it's a way that the ancient thinkers, back to Augustine, started to put together an idea of whether Christians should even be allowed to go to war, whether that was morally permissible within a Christian framework. So because revolution involves fighting, I thought, well, that's a good place to start. And it turns out it was. There are several elements to just war theory or just war doctrine that we're supposed to think about. The cause must be good. It must be a just cause. The war has to be lawfully declared by a lawful authority. You can't just have people willy-nilly deciding to go fight a war. And I think that's interesting, because one thing that that came out in this is that we haven't declared war in this country since World War II, since 1942, I believe it is. So considering all the stuff that we've been fighting since then, I think that's an interesting point to bring up when you talk about justifying war. So that's one. Intention behind the war must be good. War must be a last resort. You don't just go to war, you know, at the drop of a hat. There has to be a lot of thought and diplomatic means, economic means, whatever, before you decide that it's time to go to war. The war should have a reasonable chance of success. You shouldn't go into a war knowing that you're just going to be annihilated. It must have be in proportion to its end. So whatever the ends the war is seeking to achieve has to be in proportion to the way you get there. So those are considerations for going to war. But then just war theory also includes justifications and considerations for how you act inside a war once you're in it. There are a couple of those: that innocent people and non-combatants should not be harmed, and that you should always use appropriate force. You know, you don't go into a small skirmish with a nuclear weapon. I mean, so those are the considerations of just war theory. Those are the things that Christian thinkers have gone over for a couple thousand years to try to understand when and how we should fight wars. And I think that's a good place to start, because revolution, when you get all the way to the end, revolution is a form of warfare. So I thought that was a good way to start for that reason.
I do want to tell our listeners that we really want to explore this issue about just war theory. And of course, it's been critiqued as well by some Christian traditions or denominations that are more pacifist in nature.
Absolutely.
But we want to say that this is not going to be something that's political. We're talking about this particular ethical view that is called just war theory. So in mentioning things that have happened in the past or history that does involve wars, you mentioned World War II as the last time there was a formal declaration of war. And as everyone knows, since that time, there's been the Korean War and the Vietnam War and the War on Terror. So there has been, quote unquote, other wars. We just want to say this is not to make any kind of political statements about the historical events that happened, but just to kind of grapple with this particular issue. So, you know, just thinking about that, and just in my mention that there are some Christian traditions and denominations that would hold to a more pacifist view and would be against war in any kind of way and say it's never justified, it does seem a little counterintuitive to talk about a Christian doctrine for fighting in war. So shouldn't Christians be against fighting and considering some of those pacifist views? Aren't we called to turn the other cheek? Don't we think that we're supposed to love our enemies? And if we think about some of the New Testament teachings, and how are Christians to grapple with this in light of some of those things that are mentioned in Scripture?
Well, it's not easy, and that's why this is a difficult topic, as you brought up, and it shouldn't be political. I mean, people have turned it into a political thing, but it is a moral question for Christians in particular. And remember, we're talking just about within Christianity. How should we as Christians think about it? And there's no doubt that the early church was overwhelmingly persecuted by the Roman government. They were taken out and tortured and beaten. Some were killed. In fact, that's what the Apostle Paul, before he was Paul, when he was Saul, that's what he was doing. He wasn't part of the Roman government, but he was part of the oppression and persecution of the early Christians. And what did they do? They didn't rebel. They didn't take up arms and fight back. In fact, they tried to avoid being persecuted by just scattering, which is ironic because providentially that led to the rapid spread of the gospel. Starting in Jerusalem, people started to get away from the persecution there up to Antioch in Syria and beyond. And that's what caused the gospel to spread more. So there is a case to be made that the pacifist thinking to escape persecution instead of fighting back against it was part of God's providential plan to spread Christianity around the world. I mean, that's obviously true. That's what happened. But we also have to look at what Scripture obviously says. When we talk about what the early Christians did, that's descriptive. It tells us what they did. It doesn't tell us why they did it. So it's not prescriptive. It's not God demanding or declaring that we should do something. Scripture doesn't give us a prescription against fighting back. And I say that because some of the passages that people use to say that we should be pacifists as Christians, like you brought up, turn the other cheek. That's a passage in Matthew 5 and Luke 6 where Jesus says, if someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other cheek also. Well, obviously that is something that Christianity has always kind of preached, that turn the other cheek. But when you dig into that a little bit, the cultural background with that is Jesus specifically says, if someone strikes you on the right cheek. Well, most people are right-handed, so striking someone on the right cheek, it means it's a backhand slap, which in that culture was a sign of disrespect. And so when Jesus said to not return that, what he was saying was, don't return disrespect with disrespect. I don't think it was, and I mean, people will argue this point too, but I don't think it was saying you shouldn't strike back, because in fact, when Jesus was struck during his trial, he didn't turn the other cheek. He said, why did you strike me? You need justification. Why did you do that within the law? You had no justification for doing that. He didn't turn the other cheek. So that's the debate that goes on, and I'm not trying to push one way or the other. I'm just saying that it is a legitimate debate. Christianity is not inherently pacifistic. People will quote the end of Romans 12 that talks about living in peace, don't repay evil for evil. If it's possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone, don't take revenge, feed your enemy, clothe your enemy, overcome evil with good. Obviously, that's Christian love in action. And I think this is a case where the biblical, I mean, when we put chapters and verses in the Bible, it tends to make us separate things and say, well, this idea stands alone in Romans 12. Because in Romans 13, the very following passage, it goes on to describe the role of government. And it says, that government is instituted as an authority for those who rebel against what God has instituted. It's God's servant to do good, but if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword for nothing. He is God's servant, he being the government, an agent of wrath to bring punishment to wrongdoers. Therefore, it is necessary to submit to authorities, but only because of the possible punishment, but also because of conscience. So there is the idea that we should be peaceful, but there's also the idea that governments are instituted for inflicting punishment on those who do wrong things. And in fact, it's just the obvious thing where people want to separate, well, the Old Testament, God was waged war on the Philistines or the Canaanites or whatever. And Jesus, the New Testament God, doesn't do that. He's the God of love and turn the other cheek. But the problem is those are the same gods. It's easy to try to separate God the Father from God the Son, but they are the same God. So we have, this is not something that's easy to come down with on either side, but we have to look at the entire scope of Scripture and see what it says about this to understand. And that's what makes this so difficult about the fact that we're talking about rebelling or a revolution is against the government that God instituted.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Bob Perry, who has written a feature-length viewpoint on just war theory for the Christian Research Journal, and his article is called You Say You Want a Revolution, and you can read it for free online at our website, equip.org. In addition, we want to ask you to partner with us in one of three different ways. In this way, when you partner with us, you can help us keep bringing you these free podcasts and all kinds of free materials that we put on our website, including Christian Research Journal online exclusives that we've introduced to you through this podcast. The first way you could partner with us would be to get a subscription. You can do that at equip.org for $33.50. The second way you could help us would be if a subscription is not in your budget, you could go ahead and give us a tip, something small, like $3, $5, $10, maybe skip that lunch out or your favorite coffee drink for a week. And you can do that by going to our website, equip.org, going to magazine at the drop-down menu. You'll see Postmodern Realities Podcast at any one of the landing pages for each of these episodes, including today's episode, our discussion about just war theory. You can click on that and find the link to give us a tip. Or thirdly, if money is something that you just cannot budget for right now to give us a tip or to get a subscription, you can give us the gift of your time and rate and review this podcast. Go to Apple Podcasts, look up Postmodern Realities. Please give us a starred review, or even better yet, write a written review. Why do you listen to this podcast? Why do you think other people should listen to this podcast? When you do that, and the more ratings and reviews that we have, more people can find our content. So thanks for being a partner with us and helping bring our content to the Christian community or to anyone looking for in-depth information on questions about Christianity or reviews for movies and books and films from a Christian perspective. And thank you. You were just talking about Romans 13 and just the fact that it says that, you know, we're supposed to submit to the authority of the government. And then also, you know, I'm just wondering about Romans 12, you know, where it says that Christians shouldn't take revenge against people who do wickedness, but, you know, God will be avenged. God will be the avenger. God will be the one who gives punishment. So why should we avenge things? So how do those, you know, passages of scripture in Romans 12 and Romans 13, how do they even fit in at all with the idea of just war theory and revolution?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's why I brought those up. In order to think through a Christian view of revolution, I think we have to understand that there are moral imperatives in place. Being a Christian doesn't mean you have to be pacifist, but it does mean that there are strict limits and moral implications to our actions. So, for instance, what I was just talking about, Romans 12 and 13, God institutes governments, but governments are also the way to inflict punishment. So God himself is not pacifist in that sense. 1 Peter 2, 13 and 14 says that we should submit to kings and those in authority. 1 Timothy 2, 1 through 2 says that we should promote peaceful and quiet lives. And that's what makes this topic so difficult. There's a tension between the idea that government punishes wrongdoers and the idea that we as citizens are supposed to submit to the authority of the government. So that's why I brought those up, because that tension is where we have to go to think about revolution. I think there are three basic things that we have to take into account when you talk about a biblical view of revolution. First, that we have to have a proper understanding of the duties of citizens toward a government authority. Second, that a godly view of the proper role of government itself that we get from Romans 12 and 13. And third, there's a basis for human worth and the God-given rights, especially the right to life that we all have. So if the government is violating those, that's where that tension comes in. How do we resolve that tension?
So as Christians, how could we ever justify the idea of revolution against government? I guess it's easier to think about this in terms of history. You know, one of the pictures that we posted in as illustrating your article was George Washington. Well, if we think of, you know, the American Revolution back then, it seems so different than thinking about it today in terms of modern warfare and so forth. So first of all, how can we justify the idea of revolution against a government? And then also in your article, you talk about things inside a revolution or outside of a revolution. Can you clarify that for us? What do you mean by that?
Sure. I guess I'd start off by saying we have to make a distinction between the fact that God ordained government, the institution of government in general. We have to distinguish between that and the actions of a specific government. So God doesn't require us to just roll over and be passive and take whatever punishment an immoral government may be dishing out. If the punishment we're taking is immoral, then we can and do have a moral obligation to respond to it. That's what I'm saying. So when I talk about inside the revolution, I'm talking about the citizens who are being oppressed or persecuted by a government and abused by a violent subjugation of that government. If we are those people, what kind of actions are we morally justified in taking? That's what I mean by inside. So this is especially true in a contemporary context where we're really talking about a world community and there are serious things we have to consider, other legitimate reasons to participate in some level of rebellion against the government. So that's us, what we have to, how we as citizens can respond to violent oppression. But we also have to consider how legitimate views and actions of a biblically based response fit in as people who are outside the revolution. When I say that, I'm assuming most of our listeners are in the U.S. I'm sure they are. So how should, as when I say outside, I'm saying, how do we in America think about responding or being involved with rebellions that are going on out in other parts of the world? So that's the distinction I'm meaning between inside and outside.
So can you explain your thinking about why you're talking about inside and outside and maybe just go a little bit deeper on what you mean about inside, about these two different categories of rebellion? Because I think especially, you know, right now, I don't know that we're inside any rebellion in the United States, but right. How should we as Christians think about these things? So that would be first the inside. And then, you know, you just were talking about outside of revolution, you know, how do we even begin to think about that? I mean, it's 2020 right now. And in the news today in February, I heard about things that are going on in Venezuela and different, you know, again, I don't want to be political, but there is, you know, revolution fomenting over there. There's some unrest. So how or wherever that is, you know, Iran or any other countries where there might not be revolution per se, or maybe somebody's like, you know, protesting against the government that we've seen in the news. How are we supposed to process that and think about it as citizens, especially if we find ourselves outside of those spheres? And now we've kind of got a globalization, let me say. So, you know, we're really aware of things that are going on in other places. I'm thinking also of the Syrian war. How do we process an ethic of just war, looking at current events?
Yeah, there's a lot to that. Let me just start with what I mean when I go in more depth about when I say inside the revolution. So for us, yeah, we are not involved in any kind of revolution or rebellion that's going on right now. But there are things that are going on that can lead to that. So that's why I think we have to think of this stuff ahead. We can't wait till we're in it to see how we should respond. We have to think about it ahead of time. I think that's what the whole idea of Christian apologetics and discernment is all about. So I think of it as there's categories of revolution that range kind of from like a spectrum. I don't want to kind of category say, you know, each this kind of action is this kind of category, but there's a spectrum that extends from civil protests, say, to armed conflict that all can be associated with the kind of the term revolution. So a civil protest, as in Romans 13, Paul, he tells us that we should, our relationship with the government. What I'm saying is he doesn't seem to be addressing cases where peaceful political means of voicing dissent in a modern democratic or republican form of government. I don't think he's saying that we shouldn't be allowed to do that when he says that we should submit to the authority of the government. There's nothing anti-biblical about expressing contrary views through voting or public meetings or marches or picketing, especially if the issue that we're talking about is a contentious issue that has a matter of moral consequence. I mean, the civil rights movement in this country is a perfect example of this. Martin Luther King was the most prominent face of that movement. But there was plenty of nonviolent, peaceful protests that took place all over the country. And the cause was moral. The treatment of the minorities in general and African Americans in particular was an obvious violation of the biblical notion that all of us are made in the image of God. So that's perfectly justifiable. I don't think there's anything in Romans 13 that tells us we shouldn't be allowed to do that. These are God's morals that are being undermined. The same goes for, in our modern context, the pro-life movement, the March for Life, for example, that we just had a week or two ago. Roe v. Wade and the abortion industry that has sprung up from that is a perfect example of injustice. And I don't think there's anything wrong with civil protest against that kind of thing.
So, you know, when we're talking about revolution, of course, it seems a little bit hypothetical now in the United States in 2020, as opposed to, you know, like I said, some of the pictures that we use to illustrate your article, which are, you know, historical things that happened mainly last century or the, you know, preceding centuries. Why do you think it's important that we know about this or understand it or process it? I mean, how do we apply it to where we are now in 2020?
Oh, boy. Well, the stuff that's going on now, there are things, civil disobedience issues that are going on now that have let, you know, talking about clashes with police or blocking traffic, harming other people. Protesting and civil disobedience can go too far. And I think it's a hard line to draw. But when you start doing offensive things that harm other people, when violence gets introduced to the situation, that's when it's gone too far. And I'm thinking of instances, and this shouldn't be political. It is, because it's on opposite ends of the political spectrum, but it's moral at its center. When you talk about Antifa on the left, who shut down cities, beat people up for wearing, you know, a certain kind of hat, and the police don't enforce the law and allow this kind of stuff to get out of hand, as happened in Portland, Oregon, or in Charlottesville, Virginia, whatever it was, it last year, where people on the other end of the political spectrum were protesting statues being taken down or whatever. That got violent and people ended up being killed. I mean, so civil disobedience is something that's, when it gets violent, has gone beyond a civil rights protest, say, and it turns into something else. So that, I guess, when you talk about how that affects us today, those are things that became offensive and instead of defensive. And I think that's where it comes into view about the view of revolution, as you talked about in our past. The American Revolution, for instance. It started out as civil disobedience. It turned into violent protests and eventually into a war. And that's why I say we have to think about these things ahead of time. And the American Revolution is a great example of this. This is, you know, if we're talking about revolution, that is the perfect example of where things escalated from, The colonists thought they were being overtaxed, and so they defied the government about unjust taxation, the Boston Tea Party and all that. That led to Britain sending more troops to solidify their rule, and then those troops aggravated the conflict at what we now know as the Boston Massacre, and it turned into a full-blown war. Thomas Jefferson and John Dickinson, I talk about in the article, wrote about that the revolution, they said, was justified because they used the, this gets back to just war theory, they used the just war theory doctrine to justify that they go into war. They said it was for a just cause. They said they had the internal resources that were great enough, that they had foreign assistance that would allow them to succeed. It had all the elements of just war theory, right intention, proportionality, reasonability of success. And so when you look at it that way, it seems like that was a just cause. But there's another side to the story that, frankly, I hadn't heard much about before. And it was centered around John Wesley, who denounced the American Revolution as a sinful attack on the God-given social order. What he said was that taxation itself didn't constitute tyranny. It wasn't, you pay your taxes, you don't like it, but that's not tyranny. You're not being harmed by that. The overzealousness and irrational behavior of the colonists in that movement turned into violence. But his point was the British soldiers at the Boston Massacre, you know, we call it a massacre. There were 11 people who were harmed that day. Three died that day instantly, one the next day, one 2 weeks later. That was the Boston, and I'm putting scare quotes around, massacre. So the overzealousness of the colonists in response to that turned it into a war. But this war was perpetrated by people, and we're still feeling the effects of this today, Melanie. That's why I bring this up. John Wesley said that that fight for freedom was overzealous at its core and also perpetuated slavery. And as I said, we're still dealing with that today. So who's right? If the colonists had said, okay, listen, we will put up with this, but we're going to make you end this taxation issues and the things we don't like, but the colonies are not going to accept slavery. How might that have turned out differently 100 years later? And that's why I really want to emphasize this tension between being under the authority of government, but also not being pacifist. What is this can go either way, and it can get very dangerous. And you brought up the outside the revolution issue about Venezuela. I hadn't even really actually thought of that one. I had other examples to use, but if you want to get into that, yeah, I'd be happy to do that too.
Well, I actually want to ask you, because when you just talked about, we're talking about the Revolutionary War, and you know, maybe people don't remember, it's been a long time since U.S. history in high school, that, you know, in fact, it wasn't a massacre how we would think, you know, thousands of people or something like that. It was a few people, a handful of people who died.
Right.
You know, I think people are going to ask the question, because just war theory does apply. I mean, people have been studying it, you know, that are in the armed services, intellectuals and scholars that study wars and so forth. People are going to want to know, our listeners are going to want to know about armed rebellion. I mean, do you think Christians would ever be justified engaging in actions like that? I think there's some Christians would say, okay, now we're talking about killing people, not just that when you go to war. There's also what is termed, quote unquote, collateral damage, which is also people who are innocent of any of these actions that get caught up in that, whether it's, you know, actions of different, you know, countries fighting wars and so forth. It's happened with the United States, but not just the United States. It's happened, you know, right now in the war in Syria. There's different people fighting against the Syrian government and different other outside governments involved in that as well. So what about armed rebellion? Because then people are wondering, again, about innocent people getting caught in the crossfire, so to speak.
Right. And that's where I think we have to draw the line. When you get into armed rebellion, when you're taking up arms against your own government, that seems to have crossed the line to me. And I mean, we're not facing that now. And so it does sound hypothetical to talk about that. But the problem is there are things that are going on now that could lead to that. And to see that, all you have to do is look at the world outside of us. That's why I brought up the idea of being outside the revolution, why that's important to think about what we should do as outsiders of revolutions that are going on elsewhere. Because we may be headed in that direction. We have to think about that. And I think there are moral conditions that would allow us that we should intervene. And I don't mean that we need to be the world's police force. In fact, I mean, I have five sons who are in the military. The last thing I want to do is end up in another war. So we're not obligated to fight other nations' battles, but we do possess the economic and diplomatic power to support the causes of people who are being oppressed and persecuted and killed in other places. And you bring up Venezuela, Syria is another example. Egypt, a few years ago, had the Arab Spring there that turned violent, and we had input in those kind of things that we could have stopped. In Syria, they were chemical weapons were being used by Assad against his own people, and so we had diplomatic and economic issues that we could bring to bear to try to stop that from happening. Today, the same kind of things are going on in Hong Kong and in Iran. In Hong Kong, protests started in June of last year that have grown to over 1,000 different protests around Hong Kong. More than 6,100 people have been arrested since then. And the Xi, the leader of China, has said that anyone who attempts to split any region from China will perish with their bodies smashed and bones ground to powder. I mean, that's over the top. And that's why the people in Hong Kong were, in a sense, rebelling. They haven't gotten to armed conflict, but the Chinese government has imposed armed suppression of the civil protests that were going on. In Iran, last year, the gas prices increased by 50% that initiated protests from the people. And as of December, some estimate that over 1,500 people have been killed, 2,000 wounded, 7,000 detained by the Iranian government. And we have done things to try to economically, diplomatically punish Iran for doing that kind of stuff. I think that's a good thing for us to do. But then when you get into armed conflict and us involving ourselves in other nations' issues, then I think it goes too far. And it's the same thing in our internal issues of civil protest. When we take up arms and start fighting people and killing people, I think that goes beyond what the biblical view of revolution, supporting revolution, can be.
But just in the various different examples that you gave us, you know, I think listeners are going to say, well, that's just political. You know, why should Christians here, or Christians in general, care about that? And how does that relate to us grappling with the ethical view of just war theory, especially related to the outside? I mean, you know, what do you, you know, I think, you know, myself, I'm a minivan driving mother. I mean, do I need to know about what's going on in Venezuela and Syria? And how would any view, if I hold to just war theory, I mean, how, as I'm looking at revolution on the outside, do I even process this as a Christian?
Well, yeah, that's a difficult question, and that's why I think it's important to talk about. I just think as a nation, we have a moral obligation to stand up for people, for the idea that all people are created in the image of God. And so if you have a government on the other side of the world that's killing people just for political reasons, I think we have a moral obligation as a country to say whatever we can do, using economics and diplomacy to try to stop that from happening, that we have a moral obligation to do that. Now, that means that's going to cost us economically as a country. That may mean that it also costs us, as like I said, with our military, that we're going to send people over there, not necessarily to fight. I don't think we need to fight wars, but we need to a show of power to say, hey, there is a limit to what the world community, the community of moral people who believe in human rights, are going to allow some other government to do. And I honestly, Melanie, that's really hard. I don't know where you draw the line, but I do think we need to be involved and in thinking about that as citizens. And I also think it's something that we have to think about internally here, because like I said before, there are things going on in our country right now that there's no armed rebellion. There's not a lot of civil rebellion, but there are civil protests that are going on, and there are attitudes and mindsets being formed that can lead to that kind of stuff. And I think we need to be aware of that so that we don't end up in the places that some of these other countries have ended up with.
Well, this has been a lot of food for thought. Some of it, this is why this is a Viewpoint article. What people might not agree, just really briefly for some of our listeners. At the landing page for this episode, we will also link you to an article about jihad and just war. Is there a difference with that? Because I'm sure some people might be thinking that as they listen to this, as well as a book review that we had done years ago about a scholarly book on just war theory that you might want to pick up. Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid fire questions for Bob. So Bob, it's still wintry months, hot chocolate, hot coffee, or hot tea?
Oh, hot coffee, definitely. I got to have my coffee.
That you have 5 sons in the military, but have you ever served in the armed forces?
Actually, I did. I've spent 8 years as a Marine. I was a pilot in the Marine Corps back in the 80s.
And it's still the beginning of the year, and a lot of people are trying to stick to their New Year's resolutions, like exercising more. So do you do anything for regular exercise?
Well, I try to. I used to be a runner. I used to run marathons, and it ate up a lot of my time. So as I've gotten older and my lower back decided they didn't want me to be a runner anymore, I just try to go to the gym and do gym-type things now, just to try to not let the body break down too badly.
And finally, what's something on your bucket list?
Well, my bucket list actually, one of the main things that comes to mind is a trip to Israel. And so a couple months from now, my wife and I are heading to Israel. Neither of us have ever been there. We're going with a group of, with a Christian apologist and a archaeologist who are going to lead us on a week-long tour there. And I'm just really looking forward to that.
Well, thanks, Bob, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Okay, thank you, Melanie.
You've been listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest has been Bob Perry, who has written a feature-length Viewpoint article on just war theory for the Christian Research Journal. You can read his article completely free online at our website, equip.org, and Bob's article is called, You Say You Want a Revolution. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media, like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page, and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Anagraph, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. And please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes, and please rate and review our podcast. When you rate and review our podcast, it helps others see our content. And please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast hosted by CRI President Hank Anagraph, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged, Hank's audio podcast. Follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.